Hello and welcome to Generation Psychic. Thank you for listening. I am your host, Mooncat. To begin, I would like to thank Heather Woodward for offering me the chance to host this show. She's the one who initially gave birth to the show, and she has passed on the reins, passed on the baton, and I'm very thankful to her for that. You are more than welcome to keep up with her and her Generation Psychic whereabouts. Her website is heatherwoodward.net. As I said, I am Mooncat. You can find me at catoverthemoon.com. Today what we're going to talk about, or what I'm going to talk about, is some astrological concepts. I'm a professional astrologer. I've been an astrologer for 17 years now. Professionally, I've been studying astrology for 25 years. Started out prior to starting as a professional. But first of all, let me give you a little background and kind of let you know who I am just a little bit. So in addition to astrology, I also do tarot card readings. I do numerology. I do intuitive dream interpretation. As well, I'm an artist. I'm creating my own alternative deck of goddess cards, tarot cards. I have 37 of them prepared thus far. I'm really excited about that. I've been an art model. I've been a late night radio host playing music in the Pacific Northwest for the last 17 years. I've been the one keeping you dancing when you came home from your social activities out and about. From 2 to 6 a.m. Let's see here, what else? And I have a degree in philosophy, by golly. So that's kind of a little background check on who I am and what I bring to the table. Oh, did I say herbalist as well? That's a little bit unofficial, although I have been taking the knowledge that I've gained and healed my own issues and participated in my own health quandaries with herbs and natural healing and alternative healing concepts. I've been a participant in a kind of open-minded psychic energy pretty much my whole life. I started reading tarot cards when I was about 11 or 12 years old, so it's been a long time now. So there we go. So astrology, let's talk about that for a little bit, shall we? First of all, divining by the stars. What I wanted to explain is that phrase in and of itself is a bit of a misnomer. The only star that we look at within astrological realms is our own, that being the sun. So to say divining by the stars isn't quite accurate. Within astrology, what's being measured, what's being looked at, is the exact mathematical position of all of the planets and planetary bodies within our solar system. So the constellations and the stars that are further out beyond us are irrelevant to the figurings within astrology. They are in the backdrop. They are in the plane of the zodiac that is the grid that holds astrology up, as it were. Now what you know of, what most people know within astrology is their sun sign. And literally what that is the relative position of the sun. Now, as we know from astronomical terms, the sun is in the center and the planets in our solar system all orbit around the sun. However, from astrological, note the difference, from astrological point of view, we as human beings are standing on the earth. Therefore, the earth is our point of view. It's our fulcrum. It's where, you know, it's where we initiate our perception. And therefore, we perceive the sun as moving. You know, just like it moves across the sky over the course of the day, in astrological terms, the sun moves around the wheel of the chart. What a chart is, an astrological chart is literally is a roadmap, a mathematical roadmap to the exact angular location to where the planetary bodies are at any given moment. In out in outer space, space is a vacuum, and so everything moves at constant speed. Therefore, we can know where the planets are now, we can know where they were last week, we can know where they were 100 years ago, we can know where they're going to be 2 months from now. So it's this whole continuum. They move at constant speed. So we have this understanding of... we can do these mathematical calculations and know exactly where they're going to be at any given time. Okay, so what you know of as your sun sign, what that represents in astrological terms is it's your sole purpose. It answers the question, why am I here? What am I here to do? However, on top of that, there's all these other astrological notions that kind of build together to make us into the unique blend of human beings that we are. Every person has an astrological answer. The moment we came into being, if we cast the roadmap of our solar system at that moment, that answer, or I should say, we are... or how do I want to put this? That answer is our blueprint. We are a living manifestation of the energies of that answer. Now, what sign the planets are in has to do with where they appear, where they are in their orbit, where they are going around the sun, and then, of course, the relative position of the sun. Because we're standing on the Earth, we perceive the sun as moving, and we perceive the Earth as a still point because we're standing on it. But there's also this concept called houses. And the houses have to do with, they're a product of the rotation of the Earth. That's why the time of birth that you came into being becomes so important. Because the time of birth, the time of day that you initially came into being, that you were born, that you started, that is what sets the astrological wheel. The eastern horizon line, the shadow line where the light meets the dark, the initiation of the day, the sign that is on that that location, that becomes our rising sign. And our rising sign is actually much more overt than our sun sign. A little popular misconception there. Our rising sign is what we look like, how we appear, how other people perceive us, how we perceive ourselves. It's our personality. It's how we interact with daily life. And so our rising sign becomes much more important, or much more obvious, I should say, than what our sun sign is. So, but in addition to that, every other planet in our entire system has a location. So it has a sign, but it also has a location in the chart. It has a house placement. Once we have that initial rising sign set, we slice the wheel into these 12 pieces. There's different houses. See, astrology goes on forever. You can look at it from different points of view or from different house systems. There's equal house systems where every house is exactly 30 degrees, or we can use exact mathematical parameters, and some of the angles are wider than 30 and some are less than 30. Altogether, they equal 360, however. They go all the way around the circle. Astrology is a circular measurement system, so it's a 360/60-day system. So it's circular as opposed to linear. So, the rising sign becomes our personality. So if we want to reduce astrology to a simple term, it's actually much more accurate to say, hey, I'm a rising Scorpio, and to have people know, wink noddingly, than it is to give people your sun sign. You can give a lot more information. You can convey a lot more information by sharing your sun sign with, or pardon me, your rising sign, oh boy, than you can with your sun sign. Because it not only does your rising sign describe kind of how you interact with the world, but it also sets the wheel. The zodiac goes in order around the wheel. So once you know your rising sign, everything else follows around the wheel back to where it began again. So you're actually much more similar to other people who share the same rising sign with you than you are to people who share the same sun sign. Because depending on where in the chart the sun sign manifests, you're going to bring it out in your life and lifestyle much differently than other people who may share the same sign as you. Now, the quality of houses, of course, there's 1 through 12. The meaning of the houses follows the direction of the zodiac. the first house means the same as the initial starting point of the zodiac, Aries. It's the birth of the self. It's coming into self, into self-actualization. It's coming into self-knowledge. It's who you are as an individual and how you react as an individual. And then around the wheel of the chart, the meaning of the houses follows the zodiac. The second house means the same as the sign Taurus. It's our relationship with the material plane. It's a manifestation. It's having your feet on the ground. It's having a sense of value, a sense of worth. It's assets. It's holding something solid within your hand. It's the money in your pocket. It's value. And then moving onward, the third house means the same, see, following the line of the zodiac, means the same as Gemini. The third house represents communication, using your mind, using your words, using dialogue, participating in the teacher-student equation, and sharing or questing information. The voices in your head, if you will, is part of that. The voice in your mouth, the song in your heart, all of those things become third house definition. Communication, words, language, as well as economics. Numeric communication is part of that umbrella as well. And then moving onward, the fourth house represents, again, following the line of the zodiac, it represents Cancer in our charts. So it's the home, the relationship with the mother. It's your nest. It's your hometown. It's your local identity. It's how you nurture and protect yourself, how you parent yourself, how you parent other people, how you reach out and protect and nurture. It's that mother hen instinct, as opposed whether it's flowing outward or whether it's flowing inward. It's that active sense of your private life or home life. The fifth house is the fun one. It's ruled by Leo, the sun, the ruled by the sun itself. This is where you bloom open and throw your arms open into the world and say, ta-da, here I am, life. It's where life kind of romances you and shows you a good time. It's where you create from within yourself and bring life to the world. This can include fertility, the child within, giving birth to your own inner child, but as well as giving birth to projects, giving birth to ideas. It's where you get your book published. It's where you get your painting accomplished and hung on a gallery wall. It's where you record your album. It's where you film your movie. It's where you're creating and opening up and blooming open and performing, bringing you out of yourself and throwing your arms open in the light of day in front of God and everybody, if you will. And then following the wheel of the zodiac, the sixth house in astrological terms represent is ruled by Virgo. And Virgo is the wounded healer energy. It's the energy of assessing, analyzing, critiquing, mechanical thinking, precision thinking, eagle-eye vision. This is where you see what's wrong and figure out how to make it right. It's the troubleshooter of the zodiac. It's one of the workhorses of the zodiac as well. But it has an incredible sense of drive and perfection. It's here to get the answer right. And if anything, Virgo is mostly competitive with itself. You know, it's constantly competing against its own previous best score, so to speak. It also connects to, literally, to health and healing. So the body, nutrition, physiology, exercise, science, athletic competition, but as well it's detail, attention to detail, it's perfection of detail. So correcting and precision and editing and being really precise with knowledge in some manner or in some form. So moving onward to the second half of the zodiac wheel, moving above the ecliptic now, the next house, the seventh house, is ruled by Libra. This is the social house. Libra is the me and you sign. It's the known as relationship and partnership house. It's how you relate to others, whether they're intimate partnerships or friendships, or how you get along with your friends, how you get along with your parents, how you get along with the people on your life, how you, you know, say hello to your bus driver, what have you. It's your social interaction and your social harmony, and it's seeing beauty and bliss and harmony in the relationship between you and other people. Now, on the flip side, it's also how you, it's like the house of open enemies. It's how you get along with the people that you don't like as well, is part of that ideology. All right, moving onward, the eighth house is naturally ruled by Scorpio. Scorpio is the transformer. It's the destroyer sign. Death of the old, rebirth of the new. Now, I give a whole bunch of analogies to describe Scorpio because it can be very tumultuous in your life. But sometimes that's what we need, a giant explosion in order to allow the good to come forth or come through. So Scorpio I compare to, well, first of all, there's a quote by Nietzsche that I think it really describes the Scorpionic experience. You must wish to consume yourself in your own flames, for how could you become new unless you had first become ashes? So there's this idea of renewing yourself, but you have to first burn yourself to the core in order for that to happen. So death and rebirth, cycle of life. Now sometimes literally Scorpio kind of walks that razor's edge between life and danger, between life and death, so to speak. And so sometimes literally death is part of the process, but it's not limited to that. A Scorpio is also finding control within our own bodies, finding our own power and using it. So it deals with the chi within the body, the tantra, the kundalini. It connects in with our sexuality as human beings, as well as, again, finding our power and being a hair trigger to that power. Now, there's a lot of kind of below-the-surface energy with Scorpio, and Scorpio representing the eighth house is what I'm describing here. I compare it also to a volcano. You know, when you look across the valley, you think, oh, what a beautiful rock-solid mountain. But really, it's building up pressure beneath the surface. And when something triggers that pressure, kabam, it blows sky high. And Mount St. Helens, you know, is destroyed as we once knew it and becomes what it becomes. So it's got that volcano metaphor. It's our sexuality. It's the death-rebirth metaphor. And then as well, I kind of give it the definition, or I compare it to the metamorphic process that a caterpillar goes through on its way to becoming a butterfly. Starts off as a caterpillar, but then eventually the caterpillar has to hit the end of its road. It has to face the most terrifying choice of its life, because literally it has to lay its life down. In order to become the new creature, the old self that it once was has to give up itself. So depending on which end of the equation you're looking at that from, you know, if you look at it from the point of view of the butterfly, you know, wow, I made it. I succeeded. I had great success here. It's now gained a sense of beauty and a sense of ultimate freedom that it did not have before. But when you look at the equation from the point of view of the caterpillar, you know it's facing its most terrifying choice ever. It has to literally lay down its life, go into its, you know, spin its cocoon, go into its chrysalis phase, metamorphosize, and change into something new. But within that change, there is literally no going back. It is extreme. It is all or nothing. You know, you burn the bridge, you top down the tree, you burn the house down. You know, there's no going back to what it once was. And so the transformation is complete 100%, and it's forward bound. But it's not necessarily negative, because like I said, keeping your eye on the end of the light at the end of the tunnel, it's about the butterfly that's going to emerge after the caterpillar goes through its death process, the birth of the butterfly. All right, moving onward, the ninth house, following the wheel of the zodiac, represents Sagittarius. This is seeking higher truth and higher wisdom, seeking higher law. It involves the adventure of life, seeking knowledge, philosophy, walking the talk of your belief system, walking in the light of your own truth. Sagittarius also has a quick wit and a sense of humor and an incredible sense of honesty. Sometimes it's almost too honest. I call that foot and mouth disorder. Whoops. But as well, in seeking higher truth, it kind of gives you this sense of adventure to look around the globe to find gurus to bring that truth to your doorstep. So it involves kind of a spiritual quest or a dogmatic quest or ties to higher education, as well as ties to the legal system, higher law and correct law. And so sometimes that can be interpreted as the legal system as we know it. But Sagittarius as well, in seeking the adventure of truth, it also involves international connections and cross-cultural comparisons and international travel. Sagittarius doesn't want to just read about something in a book. It wants to gallop along the universe and experience it directly. And so as well, it has this fiery sense of athleticism. You want to throw your body into the knowledge and learning of what it is that you're seeking to know about and understand. All right, the next piece of the pie around the zodiac wheel, the 10th house, is ruled by Capricorn. Capricorn has to do with defining yourself, finding your life purpose, finding your job of life, finding your career of life, finding the title of who you are and what it is that you do. Hi, my name is Nimcat. I am an astrologer. You know, finding that title. It has to do with setting a goal, setting a structure, having a foundation, following a plan, following a map, following a list. You know, you have your goals kind of written out and defined, and each layer along the way you bring completion to. So it's a kind of a steady climb up the mountain. Capricorn is the mountain goat, climbing towards the vista, climbing towards the goal. Okay, next around the zodiac wheel is Aquarius. It's the 11th house ruled by Aquarius. Aquarius is the whole universe. It's our sense of future vision. It's our sense of genius and discovery. It connects in with the masses, mass movements, revolutionary movements, and complete changes in consciousness. Just to give this a little example, the planet that goes along with Aquarius, Uranus, was discovered at the same time electricity was discovered. And so it has this like, wow, the future is 100% completely changed now in the moment because of what discovery was revealed. And so it's about that sense of revelation and discovery and hopefulness towards the future. So being visionary thinkers and visionary discoverers, and then applying that sense of the visionary to the masses or to the all of human consciousness, recognizing yourself as an individual amongst an ocean of everything else. And then finally, around the zodiac wheel, the final house of the wheel is the 12th house, ruled by Pisces. This is where you go within the self and find forgiveness. This is where you assess, analyze, figure it out, release, reveal. And so we have mystical sensitivities here. In Pisces, we have psychic consciousness. We deal with the layers of the consciousness, the doorways to perception, sensitivities to what's subtle below the surface and in the subconscious or unconscious in the dream realms, the dreaming realms. And Pisces is very empathic and kind of wrapping up the soul. It can be very emotionally, and those emotions can definitely be heavy. You're not only experiencing your own emotions and finding forgiveness with yourself, which in and of itself is an amazing task, but you're also empathically vibing on other people's emotions as well. And so it opens up this great sense. It makes us into kind of like psychic antennas. So we have this great sensitivity to other people's emotions as well, as we go around the wheel. So that's the kind of the wheel of the zodiac in front of us. And what makes us all unique, vibrant human beings is that we have this blend of all of these attributes. Now, somewhere in our chart, every single one of the signs are represented. So literally, we have pieces of all of it. But what makes us unique is how much of a piece we have and which piece we have. Because the second part of what I'm going to talk about is the planetary alignments and their meaning and how we apply that and what becomes most important. because really within an astrological chart, what is the most important point is going to be individual to each chart. There's no way of predicting, you know, the sun is always the most important. That's not true. The rising sign is always the most important. That's not necessarily true either. You have to look at each individual answer to come to that conclusion. Okay, we're getting ready to take a break. Again, I remind you, I am Mooncat. I'm the host of Generation Psychic this week and henceforth. Thank you to Heather Woodward for passing on the baton. Her website, heatherwoodward.net, and my website where you can find me, Mooncat, is catoverthemoon.com. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back after this quick break. Stay tuned to Jackalope Radio.
You live inside a dream. Everything tastes so sweet, as long as it agrees with how you feel. You're dancing in your sleep, to all the eyes that look at me, awaken your anxiety. You're so afraid, so you try to frighten me, yeah. Don't wanna care and I don't wanna hate and I don't wanna see you fall too far away. It's all because of me. Wish I'd pray to last and to blame when you say all the things that you never meant to say and try to break me. But in the end, when the leaves are broken, in the end, your face looks so green when the sun's shining differently, and you're standing in the shade. Cause face to face you're sweet like candy sticking to my teeth underneath so tenderly. There is no strength in trying to break me. No, I'm
again, and welcome back to Jackalope Radio. This is Mooncat, your host for Generation Psychic. Today is March 3rd, 2011. Merry Christmas, everybody. Now, I say that because of... the historical figure who was the Christ figure ushered in the age of Pisces. And right now, in the modern era, in the 2011, we are entering the age of Aquarius, just like we've been singing since 1969. And but just within the whole Christian philosophy, the Trinity becomes a big deal. The number three becomes very, very powerful. So, and the Christ figure ushered in the age of Pisces, and indeed his personality was very Pisces-like. So I like to give a little wink and nod and say Merry Christmas on March 3rd, because it makes sense to me. So I offer that to you as well. So we're talking today about astrology, and I kind of gave this overview of the passage of the astrological wheel, the passage of the chart, and what each one of the houses means around that wheel. It follows the definitions of the zodiac itself. The first house follows the meaning of Aries, and it climbs through. The second house means Taurus. The third house means Gemini. The fourth house has the same definition as Cancer. The fifth house is Leo. The sixth house is Virgo. The seventh house is Libra. The eighth house is Scorpio. The ninth house is Sagittarius. The 10th house is Capricorn, the 11th house is Aquarius, and the 12th house, finaling out the wheel, is Pisces. But it doesn't end there because it's a cycle. Then everything kind of crosses your horizon again and starts over fresh. And so nothing ever ends in astrology. It just kind of goes to the next layer of the spiral as it moves around the wheel. So, what makes us such unique, amazing, dynamic individuals is we have this whole mixture of the blueprint of the roadmap that we carry. Each one of the planets within our solar system has a definition. It has a meaning that it carries with it. And depending on the placement of where that planet was at the time of your birth, you know, certain planets have more or less weight or value within the interpretation of the chart. But nonetheless, let's kind of look at that direction as a whole. Your rising sign is actually the most overt and obvious. The rising sign is based on the time of day that you came into being. It's based on the hour and minute. It's literally the horizon line, the eastern horizon line, the shadow line, where the dark meets the light of day. At the moment that you were born, we look to the east and say, okay, what sign was the shadow line poking out at that moment? Even if you were born in the afternoon or the middle of the night or whatever, that places the sun sign in the chart, if you're born in the middle of the night. But we still look to the eastern horizon, that shadow line, to find the rising sign answer. And of course, it's defined by the backdrop of the zodiac wheel behind it. That's where the constellations come into play. They kind of hold up the grid, hold up the map of the sky, as it were. Okay, but on top of that, or what the planets mean, let's go there. The rising sign is your personality, how you appear, how you react to other people, how other people react to you, how they perceive you. But in addition to that, we have all the other planetary bodies. The sun, of course, it's not a planet, it's an astronomical body, but nonetheless, the sun represents our sole purpose. It answers the greater question, why am I here? What am I here to do? What am I here to accomplish? And how you find that answer is by going inside the chart and seeing which house the sun is placed in. Now, you might have your sun sign might be Sagittarius, but your sun is placed in the first house, the Aries house, the house of self. And so that means you are here to kind of live out and show your Sagittarius nature to the world as an individual force. See? And so it's this layer and layer of defined definition of movement. But it doesn't stop there, because every other planetary body has a definition as well. Next up is the moon. The moon represents the flow of our emotions. Now, the moon goes completely around the wheel every single month, so any moon sign can be combined with any sun sign. It's cyclical in that manner. So the moon represents our sense of, it's our emotions, It's our feelings. It's our intuitive presence. It's how we flow with the emotions within, you know, under our own skin, in our hearts, in our sense of empathy, in our sense of compassion, in our sense of, you know, emotional, you know, what catches in your throat, you know, brings a tear to your eye. That's described by your moon sign. But over and above that, we also have Mercury. Now, Mercury is always within 30 degrees of the sun. So whatever your sun sign is, you only have three possibilities for your Mercury sign. Either the sign that's directly before your sun sign, the sign that's the same as your sun sign, or the sign that's directly after your sun sign. So it's a little bit more limited in that sense. Mercury represents our sense of communication. It's the natural ruler of Gemini, which goes along with the third house. So again, layer, layer, layer of defined meaning. Mercury is the thinker, it's the communicator, it's the wordsmith, it's the ability to process the information. Now, in the modern era, that also includes all of our gadgets and gadgets. It includes our computers and our telephones and our Blackberries and our ability to, you know, post videos on YouTube. All those things are mercurial in their process or in their definition. Mercury is also kind of moving about from here to there, from here to there, from here to there, networking, introducing yourself to other people. It's very social in that sense because of its house conversation. It doesn't want to just hear itself think out loud. It wants to know that somebody is on the other end of the communication, offering feedback, or, you know, offering feedback into the dialogue. So it's this kind of very social, in-motion energy. Next up in our astrological definitions is Venus. Venus represents love. It's how we perceive love, how we perceive beauty, what's harmonious to us, what's rhythmic to us, what shows us a good time, what is comfortable to us, what gives us a sense of bliss and joy and happiness, and where we can find value in those things and how we can share that value just in being who we are, and how we share it directly with other people. So as well, Venus is somewhat social because of it is it mirrors itself off of the other and participates in beauty and art in all of its forms and formations. Next out is Mars. Mars is our sense of direct energy, our sense of go, 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 go. It's our sense of being in motion. It's our sense of, it's also the masculine sense, and so it brings on a more assertive or potentially aggressive tone. It can be, you know, the blood boiling beneath your skin. Mars can definitely open up to anger or the, you know, the fighter within, the warrior within. The Lord of War is known as, you know, Mars is known as the Lord of War, whereas Venus is, you know, the goddess of love. Mars is the Lord of War. So, interesting parallel in that sense. Next up, we have the actual what's it called? The asteroid belt. And there's four main asteroids that are looked at in modern, you know, in modern astrology, but they're still kind of subtext, as it were. But really, there's hundreds of asteroids that have meaning. So you can actually take and plot all of them and bring out hundreds of little intimate pieces of definition out of defining who you are according to where they were placed, you know, where they were the moment you were born. It's amazing stuff. Amazing stuff, and it's incredibly mathematically accurate. Of all the esoteric arts, astrology is the most scientific. When, you know, because literally it's like the face of a clock, only instead of having an hour hand, a minute hand, and a second hand, it has instead, you know, it has a hand for each one of the planets, and some of them move relatively quickly. The moon moves over an astronomical point. It moves over a single degree in 2 hours. So that one's fast in terms of how it has effect. And then other planetary bodies move slowly. I'm getting to that end of the list here shortly. Pluto has a orbital period of 248 years. So it takes a very long time to go completely around the wheel. So the moon takes 28 days, 248 years. And all the rest of the planets are somewhere between those two points. Anyway, I digress. Where was I up to? Oh, the asteroid field. Next up is Jupiter. Jupiter is the ruler of Sagittarius. This is seeking and finding truth, wisdom, applied wisdom, educating yourself, the opportunity to open a door towards greater learning. It's abundance and fortune and good luck. Jupiter is the biggest planet in our solar system, and so that sense of big also comes with its definition. It likes to be grandiose. It likes to give you a big helping or a big portion or a big boost forward. It's very positive and proactive in that sense. Sometimes it can be a little bit too positive and a little bit too overindulgent. Oh, no, my tummy hurts or something like that. Or, whoops, I drank too much or whatever the case may be. So, you know, temperance and moderation is also part of what we have to keep in mind with planetary influences. All right, next out in our solar system is Saturn. Saturn is about structure. Saturn is about hard work. Saturn is the ruler of Capricorn, and we kind of think of it as a stern grandparent, you know. If you work hard and achieve, you'll set your goals, you'll make it, you know, rah. And so it kind of takes a little bit of the fun out of life, but if you're doing the work that you love, then it's all fun. Saturn is about having a goal, having a plan in mind, and then following that goal or plan and reaching conclusion. Now, sometimes Saturn's not necessarily fast. It's about deep, kind of slow-moving lessons as you climb the mountains. You know, that metaphor of Camus' Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill. You know, there's your vista up there, and you've got to push, you know, you've got to climb to attain your goal, and you've got to apply hard working values to get there. So Saturn is about the struggle of doing that work, you know, achieving that work and having a plan or a plan of action in order to make it happen. Okay, next out is the planet Chiron. Now, I recognize there's still plenty of people out there that have never heard of Chiron yet, which is a travesty to me, so let me introduce you to Chiron. Chiron is the next planet out, and it's got an interesting point that its orbit goes askew. All of the planets within our solar system kind of orbit along the same orbital plane, except for Chiron. It tips above and below the plane. It orbits at an angle compared to the rest of the planets, which is interesting. Anyway, Chiron is the wounded healer essence. It was just discovered in 1977, so it's actually fresh to our knowledge in the modern era. It goes along with the meaning of Virgo, the applied healing, applied knowledge, taking what you learned, critiquing, analyzing, perfecting, applying what you learned, and making it better. So this one as well is a bit of a workhorse of the zodiac. Saturn, which is ruled by Capricorn, and Chiron, which is ruled by Virgo. These are the two workhorses of the zodiac. They're here to get her done, and they're here to do so with precision and exactness, or especially the Virgo side, the Chiron sign. Ultimately, it's here to heal whatever was wrong or whatever was broken. So it's here to get the answer right. It's here to go all the way and achieve perfection. So it has an incredible drive to do exactly that. Now, within the definition of wounded healer, there's this literally health becomes part of its definition. So the health of the body, the nutrition of the body, the exercise of the body, the physiological structure. But as well, it's about having this sense of perfection, eagle eye vision, or architectural detail, I like to say or describe it as. It is where we find precision of situation. So not only are we healing or perfecting or fixing our bodies or our health, we're also healing and perfecting situation as well. So finding perfection in situation. Chiron can be the process of editing or bringing precision to words or the flow of information as well. Okay, next out from Chiron is Uranus, the revolutionary planet. This is the planet that's ruled by Aquarius, so let your freak flag fly. Woo! Have a great time with that one. Uranus is the revolution of consciousness, riding the wave of change. Now, sometimes that change can be a bit chaotic. It's like a lightning strike, or it's like an electrical shock, if you will. It's about mass movements, connecting yourself to all of humanitarian culture. Now, in the modern era, or in the modern age, or in the modern moment, for that matter, one of the concepts that very much describes Uranian capacity, if you will, is the internet, the World Wide Web, bringing instant manifestation, instant communication, and it equalizes the playing field. It kind of makes everybody, all the individuals, the mass of individuals, kind of gives everybody equal value. It's no longer, you know, the king and the serfs below the king, you know, the royalty and the peasants. With Aquarius, we bring ourselves, we lift ourselves into equality. And experience life as at oneness. And then the universal catapulting thrust that brings us to that conclusion. So Aquarian energy or Uranian energy can be deep, deep thinking and can bring absolute genius of possibility for sure. Okay, moving outward, Neptune is the next planet in our zodiac lineup. The planets don't follow the order of the zodiac signs, so that's interesting that they're all mixed around in that sense, but that's all right. We forgive them. The next planet out is Neptune, which is ruled by Pisces. This is our spiritual sense, our spiritual value. Now, even though Pluto, Scorpio, is known as the death rebirth energy, Pisces as well has this kind of tie to the energy of death rebirth because it deals with the veil between the living and the dead. It deals with the spiritual veil. It's the layers and levels of the soul, the mysticism of the subconscious or the unconscious. It's trusting your instinct versus being deceived, kind of looking through the fog and finding truth, trusting your path and trusting your spiritual voice. You kind of have to let your intellectual side stand down a little bit with Neptune because it's about trusting the spirit, trusting the soul, trusting God, if you will. Neptune compares to or connects to Christ consciousness. But just to remove it from any kind of religious dialogue, dogma, or baggage for that matter, I like to call it, to give it a little modern day spin, I like to call it the inner Yoda, having that sense of faith and fortitude in the spiritual path that you are on, the inner Yoda, expressing the inner Yoda. Now with Neptune, we have mystical abilities and psychic abilities and intuitive abilities. It's tuning into the layers and levels of the soul, literally. Okay, and so it's not necessarily intellectually concrete. It's nor does it necessarily need to define itself. It's more about trusting what the subconscious or unconscious is showing you, and keeping your intellect at bay beyond that trust. Okay, and then finally in our zodiac wheel, we have the planet Pluto. Now, of course, Pluto got demoted a couple years ago, and that made me catch my breath because Pluto is the destroyer planet. And I'm like, that's of all the planets, that's the one you don't want to make mad. But alas, they made him mad, and look what happened. Pluto is the destroyer planet. It's the death and rebirth paradigm. So everything that I was talking about in the first half of our hour together, about Scorpio, that definition holds here. It's the lust for power. It's finding control within your own skin. It's death and rebirth. And so endings, transitions, transformations, and sometimes these endings can be abrupt. It's the eruption of a volcano. It can be chaotic. It can be devastating. But with the devastation comes, you know, new growth or new rebirth beyond the devastation, but it's not necessarily a fast process. You know, Mount St. Helens blew up, and 30 years later, you know, there's gorgeous a whole new a flora in the area. But, you know, it took, you know, decades worth to move beyond the devastation of the moment that, or of the, you know, the moment of the devastation when the volcanic cataclysm occurred in the first place. So Pluto is the destroyer in those terms, finding the power walk and the razor's edge between life and death, and describing that process. And so it's finding power within the self, within the soul, and where you can use that power. So all of that planetary meaning is part of an astrological interpretation. What the planet means, what sign it's located in, and what house it's located in. We put all of these three layers of definition together. But it doesn't stop there. Astrology is a mathematical process. When you look at an astrological wheel, it's covered with numbers. And so there's also particular angles that have more, greater or lesser power. The five main angles are a conjunction, which is where planets are together. Now, of course, they're not side by side in the universe. They're angularly together. So the moon, which is closest to us, can be angularly conjunct with Pluto, which is furthest away from us. So it's how they're in a line from an angular point of view. Conjunction means, you know, together. The two energies, the two defined energies act as one in harmony. Next up is a sextal, which is a 60-degree angle providing opportunity, opening a door. So the planets that are part of that equation would trigger each other towards a greater effect, but you have to actively take on that effect. Next up is a square, which is a 90-degree angle. That's kind of like creative tension. One energy wants to go this way, and the other energy wants to go that way, and they crash in the middle a little bit. So it's, you know, how to work, how to get beyond the creative tension. The next angle looked at within astrology, the next main angle, I should say, is a trine, which is 120. This one is cosmic flow. The energies of the planetary bodies that are in a trine angle with one another, they flow together. They absolutely come into just cosmic harmony, and it's, you know, it makes it easy. They happen without necessarily your input, whereas a sextal, a 60-degree angle, you have to kind of actively activate your input. See the difference? This is like a double sextal. A trine is a double sextal. Two 60-degree angles put together into a 120-degree angle. And then finally, the last angle that we look at numerically is an opposition. That's where planets are 180 degrees apart from each other. Now, not to be confused by the word opposition, because it doesn't necessarily mean that the energies are fighting one another, but it does mean each one needs to take its turn. I like to think of it as a teeter-totter. You know, when one energy is doing the work, the other one gets to take the ride. Whee! But then they switch off. The other one gets to do the work, and the other one gets to take the ride. Whee! And so it's this back and forth kind of process. So they're not necessarily arguing against each other in the moment. That's actually more of a square angle, the 90-degree angle. They're more needing to take turns or give sides to one another. So there's our initial kind of thrust of astrological knowledge shared for you. Now, do you need to be self-responsible for this knowledge? Not necessarily. Your astrologer knows all this, and they will tell you the important points. Because, like I said in the beginning, some points within astrology will have more weight in terms of its meaning, in terms of its value, in terms of how strong its effect is for you. And other things will have less weight. It just depends on how it lines up, you know, how they all react and interact one with another. So stay tuned next time. I will continue the astrological dialogue. This is Mooncat, your host of Generation Psychic. Please be in touch. I write astromissive astrology essays every couple of weeks. I post them at my website, catoverthemoon.com. And the archive goes back to 2006, so you're more than welcome to read back in your life and see how the movement of the planets may have affected particular time frames in, you know, on your path. Now, as well, I encourage everybody to know yourself. There have been people who are like, I want to understand astrology more, but it's easier to start from the point of knowing your own chart, and then you can kind of work backwards into understanding how astrology as a whole works, rather than going the other direction. Start with your own lesson. Start with your own answer. Know yourself. All right, thank you very much for listening to Jackalope Radio. This has been Mooncat, your host for Generation Psychic on March 3rd, 2011. Thank you for listening. Thank you again as well to Heather Woodward for offering me the opportunity to host this show. And I'll be back next week, and I will continue our astrological dialogue. So until then, be well, have a great day, have a great week. CatOverTheMoon.com, check it out, I'll be there. All right, take care. Bye-bye.